All right, we're still in our series. We're moving along, How to Influence Friends and Tactfully Get Along with People, Part 3. Part 1 was Build the Relationship. So Paul spent a lot of time building rapport with Philemon. Then in Part 2, he started using the relationship that he had built up. And now Part 3 is where you start asking for some kind of commitment. We have a relationship, we've used it to some degree, but now we're moving into actually solving a problem or making something happen. If you're a manager, you need a relationship with the people that you're managing. Then you move into using that influence that you have. But finally, you want something done. So do it. Ask for it. Number one, make your requests or suggestion with humility. Philemon verse 17. So if you consider me a partner, so he's talking to Philemon, if you consider me a partner in the gospel, welcome him, Onesimus, as you would welcome me. Paul has told Philemon what he really would like, okay, in the previous verse. He really wants to keep Onesimus as his helper. So Paul hinted at that. This is what I'd like. This is what I prefer. But I don't want to make you do it. I don't want to command you to do it. I don't want to just do it. I want, you know, if that were to happen, it would be because of your kindness to me in this situation. All right. Paul's not pushing for this desire. But now, here in this verse, he spells out in no uncertain terms what he is willing to push for. And what is that? That Philemon accept his runaway slave, Onesimus, as if he were Paul himself. So finally, after so many verses, Paul says what he wants. Notice Paul makes his requests only after he spent a considerable amount of time building up his relationship with Philemon. In fact, I think there are 25 verses in the whole book. And Paul uses the first 16 or 17 verses to build the relationship. And so it's not until almost at the very end of the book, the end of the letter, that Paul finally says to Philemon, this is what I am uncategorically asking for. Well, why is this a good idea? Why build the relationship before asking something from it? Number one, cooperation is more certain. If you don't have much of a relationship with someone and then you ask them a difficult thing, I would like you to invest in my company. I would like you to volunteer for this committee in our church. But I don't know you. I don't have a connection with you. Your cooperation is less likely. The more I know you, the more rapport we have, the more of a connection, the more you're probably willing to say yes to whatever it is I ask. People in our church, I wait until I have a relationship with them before I either ask for money or I ask them for, willingness to lead something. You know, would you be willing to lead the whole renovation of our outside of our building? I don't just ask anyone that. I ask people that I already know have the gifts and abilities, but also I have a connection with them. They're more likely to say yes. Number two, why build a relationship before asking something from it? You're more likely to... The compromise is more likely. Generally, moving forward with anything, there has to be some compromise. There's things that I want. This is how I want things to go. But now I'm asking you to be involved. You have your own ideas, and maybe I'm kind of a control freak. I would like things exactly the way I would like them. I would like you to do things exactly like I would like them done. I'm incredibly knowledgeable on this subject, but I just don't have the time, so I'm asking you to do it. Okay, maybe that's exactly what you'd really, really, truly like, but you won't get it. You will not get it. People will not own it exactly like the way you want it. And the price that you have to pay, if you're a control freak, the price that you have to pay to get someone else to do this thing that you don't have time to do is you have to give up that control. And part of giving up the control is letting them have some of their ideas influence what it is that you ultimately want accomplished. So there has to be compromise on your part and on their part. They're not going to be able to do it exactly like they want to, too. In order for them to be given the responsibility by you, they have to compromise. Well, if you have a good relationship with someone, both parties are more likely to compromise. Number three, why build a relationship before asking something from it? Obedience to commands are more cordial. As a manager, there are times where you have to say, this is exactly what it is I want from you. As a parent, you have to do this with your children. You have to, you know, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to manage our household. This is how we're going to manage the church. This is what we're going to do in this situation. There are those times that you have to step in like a benevolent father and dictate what's going to happen. But people are more likely to go along with it and actually obey and do it with a good attitude if you have a relationship with them, if you've encouraged them, if you found good things in them, if you've communicated that you've been praying for them all along, if you have always had in mind mutual benefits, I'm trying to help you, you try to help me, all these things that we've been talking about over the last several videos, if you've been doing all of that, when those times come when you have to make a command, they'll be more cordial, they'll be more open to following what you said. Number four. Why build a relationship before asking something from it? Follow through is more thorough. A lot of times people will do what they've been told to do. I once worked for an air compressor company. They made air compressors. They sold air compressors. I was a teenager. I knew nothing about air compressors. And I started working there, and I would go to the boss, and I'd say, what do you want me to do? And he'd show me something. And I'd work on it for 3 hours, and I'd get it done. And when it was done, I came back to him. And he would always be disappointed because he really didn't want to manage me at all. He just wanted to do whatever he was doing. So then he had to figure out something else for me to do. And I'd get it done quickly, and I'd come back. And he got so tired. You know, the fact that I was going fast actually hurt me because I had to keep coming back to him. He'd rather have me just do whatever and just not bother with him. So finally, he found something that I could just do without his interference, without his helping me at all. But he had spent a little time with me. One day, he finally, you know, we had lunch and he had nothing to do and I had nothing to do. And we started talking. We started talking about sports and where we're from and all those things. And from that day on, it was like there was a connection. And so then he gave me stuff to do, and I took more interest in it. I got more involved in the company. I actually learned about air compressors that I didn't really care about before. And I only did that because we had a bit of a relationship. You have a relationship with someone, they end up caring about the whole enterprise that you're involved in. Give people space to come around to your way of thinking. That's really the humility part. You want to ask what you want to ask from somebody. I want you to do something. But you do it in humility, and you do that by giving people space. Well, how do you do that? Number one, don't counter someone's ideas and opinions, no matter how strongly stated, with a strong opinion. When people do that, they cut off communication. So let's say you're talking about, you know, some problem. What are we going to do in our sanctuary? Our carpeting is old and we have to, you know, rip it out. Or how are we going to do this? So we had a committee. People sit down, and someone who, you know, is in that business, think they know everything about it. The first thing they said is, this is what we have to do. I work in this industry, and this is it. We have to rip this out. We have to do this. We have to do this. We have to do that. They said it in a powerful, strong way. That's the first thing that is said, first thing that goes on the table. Everyone else just sits back. Because what am I going to say? Maybe I have a different opinion. My opinion might be, well, I think we should look into this. Let's go check out a few churches. Let's see what the possibilities are. Who knows what we might do? I mean, there's cost is one side of the thing, but there's the cool factor, what works, you know. What are we going to do with the space? There's a lot of questions here. Okay, but this person started off by, you know, putting a strong opinion out there. And there were some people on the committee who aren't very strong. They're talented, gifted people, great ideas, but they're not going to share them. Because in order to share them, they're going to have to put the same strong opinion back. Well, I think you're wrong. You see, now we got to fight. And most people don't want to fight. And so why start off with a strong opinion? Number two, give people space with words like, in my opinion, we should do this with the floor. Or, it seems to me. Or, as I recall, it went this way. You know, if you're talking about some event in the past, you know, people will, no, this, you know, I remember Joe said this. Well, maybe you remember that, and maybe it's exactly correct how you remember it, but maybe someone thinks Joe said something else. Give them space to give their opinion. If you don't give them space to say what they think, they'll be less likely to buy into what you're thinking. They'll be holding on to that thing. Well, that's not how I think it. And they'll just keep it to themselves, and your opinion will sway the day, but they won't buy into it. But if I just say, as I recall, even if I know for sure, I know this is exactly what happened. No. As I recall, this is what happened. Now, if you recall something different, you can put it on the table. And when things get on the table, we can talk about them. If they stay in someone's head, then we can't resolve it. If I could give my opinion, see, if you just start off, now, maybe you're knowledgeable. Maybe you know everything about this subject and everyone else in the room doesn't. So what? You're still giving your opinion. Let's say someone gives their opinion, and let's say they make it really strong. Counter with, you know, you make a really good point. So in other words, I agree with you. But here's another way to look at it. I'm not saying your opinion is invalid. I'm not saying it's not a good idea. I'm just saying that there might be another way to look at it. Do you mind if I share that? And most people are going to say, okay. So just, you see, you have an opinion about stuff. You have a feeling about things. And you've had it for a long time. And you had personal experiences that have brought you to the place where you are. And then somehow you just think that if you say it, you give your opinion, that somehow everyone in the room is just going to jump on the bandwagon and say, well, that's a good opinion. They haven't been thinking about it. They don't have all the different experiences that you have. Or if they have experiences, it's different than yours. So allow people space to throw their feelings out. Allow them time. You know, people what they think is like a big ship. And if you want them to turn around with their way of thinking, it takes a long time to turn around. And one of the best ways to get them to turn around or consider turning around is for them to put all their thoughts on the table. You want everything on the table. Because once they put it on the table, they feel like they got it off their chest. They feel like they've been heard. And now they're ready to be educated one way or the other. Remember, in the end, if you're a manager, you can insist on your way. Okay, in the end, you're the one in charge. So people can talk about it. People can have all their strong opinions. And in the end, you can just say, well, you know what? This is what I think we're going to do. In other words, you can pull the authority card any time in the process. If you're in charge, if you're the manager, you can pull that card any time. So why throw it out early? Why play your ace? You know, if you're playing cards, you know, the ace is a high card. Why not let people enjoy the game for a little while? You can always throw the ace in and win. So why not let the process go on for a while? Maybe you don't have to throw your ace. Maybe someone in the group will give the exact thing that you really want to happen, and they'll say it, and everyone will be convinced, and they'll all go along with it, and you didn't have to, you know, use your authority in any way. And then someone else in the group starts owning this problem rather than you owning all the problems. Okay, the next verse, Philemon, verse 18. If he, Philemon, has done you any wrong or owes you anything, charge it to me. part three, commitment, do it, ask for it. Number two, offer to help where you can. That's what Paul does. Paul is asking, you know, remember Paul is saying to Philemon, what I'd really prefer is to keep Philemon. Okay? But what I'm going to insist on is that you accept him as a brother in the Lord. Accept Philemon as you would accept me. So that's his true ask. Now, what is that going to mean? Does that mean Philemon is going to be set free? Or is Philemon going to stay in Rome? Paul is now saying, look, I know this is going to be a hardship for you. If there's a problem, I will make up the difference. I will offer. I'm offering to help in this situation. If Philemon sets Onesimus free, it will cost. Philemon, the price of the slave, added to this will be the cost incurred by Philemon to hunt for him after he escaped. Perhaps another slave was bought to replace Onesimus. That would be an added cost. Paul sort of puts himself out on the limb, offering to pay any and all costs. I mean, there's a lot of costs. If you add it up all up, it might be considerable. And Paul's saying, look, if this is going to be a problem for you, Philemon, I will pay. This is kind of put your money where your mouth is. Number one, get your hands dirty. If you're a manager, the tendency is to sit back. I've hired all you people, or you've been hired by the company or the organization. I need you people to go out there and do it. We're going to do a renovation in our church. I could just get people to do it. And I'm the pastor. I preach on Sunday. I do the counseling. I do the leadership things. I don't do the hammer. See, if you're going to be a manager and you don't pick up the hammer, you're not going to get people that really want to take the hill that you're trying to take. You got to grab the hammer. You got to grab the, you know, when we were doing this renovation thing, there was a guy visiting from Germany, and he really wanted to paint. We had to paint all the walls, and they were, you know, 12-foot walls, or had big rollers and sticks, and, you know, so I got all the paint, and I said, all right, you let me know when you can do it. Well, I was on vacation. It wasn't too far away, and he picked a day that I was on vacation. I drove back. If this guy is willing to spend 16 hours on one particular day, if he's willing to do that and come in and start painting, I will be there. I will get the rollers. I will get the thing, and I will go side by side with you, and we're going to get this thing done. It took us one day. We got the whole thing done. If you want things done, you've got to get your hands dirty. You can't just sit on the sidelines and let everyone else. I had a manager when I was planting a church. He was a church planting manager, I guess. He'd visit every couple months. We'd go out to eat. He'd pay for lunch. We'd talk about things, and he'd go back. You know what he should have done? He should have come once a month and said, hey, let's go and visit all the stores or all the shop owners. Do you have a place where there's a lot of shop owners and stuff? Yeah. Why don't we go there? Do you have any cards from your church? No? Let's go make some. And then he should have just taken, we should have visited, you know, like 20 shops and walked in and said, hey, I'm starting a church here, and here's my card. If you have any prayer needs whatsoever, something comes up, don't hesitate to call me. He could have taken my hand and went down, and we'd have just done that. And instead of having lunch together, we would have done something. I would have walked away going, wow, this guy is on the ball. I'm willing to follow this guy. I'm willing to do stuff. I'm excited. See? You got to get your hands, you got to get it in there. If you want people to do something, you got to do it. Number two, go the extra mile. Don't just ask people to do things. Help them. People have to get the idea that you care more about them than what it is you're asking them to do. I want you to succeed in your whole life, not just in this project. And you know what? People will go the extra mile. Number three, pay the price. If you want people on your team and you want the team to help towards the goal, you have to pay the price. No one's going to pay a higher price than you. If you're not willing to put in the time, if you're not willing to put in the effort, then no one else will. Number four, roll up your sleeves and get to, I guess I'm saying the same thing over and over again. You can't just sit back. The job of a manager is not like, well, I got it easy because I don't have to do anything and I have all these people who will do it. you know, at church, you know, that's a tendency. You know, I got to teach Sunday school. You know, as a pastor, I've already done that. I've taught Sunday school. I've taught catechism. I've done the young people's. I've painted. I've done the sermons. I've done the leadership things. I've done the small groups. You know, there isn't a single thing that I haven't already done a million times. So why should I do any of these things? Now, I am getting leaders to do these things, but if people don't see me doing them, if I don't show up and teach a Sunday school class, so I show up. Wednesdays are our program thing. We have kids things going on. I show up. I play the ball hockey with the kids. I'm not going to be the aloof person that sits in some office. I got to get in there. People have to see me caring about every little aspect. I don't control it. I don't run it. But I'm going to be in it. I'm going to be a participant just like them. If there's a church camp out, I'm there. If the church is doing something, I will be there. I'm not going to ask people to go to things that I myself don't go to. If a manager is not willing to sacrifice for the cause, no one will sacrifice for the cause. John 3:16, God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have eternal life. God got his hands literally dirty. First of all, he puts his hands in the mud and forms a human being. And then God himself comes down to earth and becomes one of us, becomes flesh and blood, lives among us, is a child, is a teenager, grows up, teaches, gets crucified, is buried, is raised again. I mean, so God has done this, and that's what it's going to take. If you want people to be involved, that's what it's going to take.